Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For the ring, eyes wide open, never asleep, he's looking for the ring.
From newsounds.org, this is our Soundcheck series of live in-studio performances. I'm John Schaefer. Rhiannon Giddens, the Grammy and MacArthur Award-winning singer, banjo player, fiddler, and songwriter, has collaborated with the Italian multi-instrumentalist Francesco Tarisi on a stunning new album called There Is No Other. The title is a condemnation of othering, you know, this idea of the other that separates people by political party or faith or race. The album is a celebration of our differences and our underlying commonality, and Rhiannon and Francesco have joined us here in the studio to play some of the music from this brand new record, beginning with a song called 10,000 Voices. The song is called 10,000 Voices, and it is the opening track on Rhiannon Giddens' brand new album called There Is No Other. You heard Rhiannon singing. It's great to have you back with us here in the studio today.
Great to be here.
And Francesco Tarisi playing the cello banjo? Is that what that instrument is?
Yes, it's an original Gibson 1920s cello banjo. It's not my instrument. It's actually Rhiannon's
instrument. It's
Rhiannon's,
yes.
Well, it kind of is his instrument now.
And Jason Seifer on the double bass. On the record, it's not the cello banjo, right? It's an instrument that sounds like almost like an Arab oud.
Yes, it's a kind of a hybrid instrument that I got someone to build for me. It's a cross between a lute and an oud. I don't know if people might know, but the instruments have the same origin. Like the European lute comes from the Arabic oud or oud.
Al-oud.
Exactly. Al-oud, which means wood. So the word lute comes from oud, but also the word wood comes, you know. So there already tells you the story about everything we do. Everything is connected, you know.
Right. Which Rhiannon is kind of the idea, the fundamental idea behind this record, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, look, human beings are very good at banding together. But the flip side of that is once we've done that, we look at all the other people and they are other.
Yeah.
So we're very good at that.
Well, the thing is, it's kind of a weird push-me-pull-you because culturally, we're very good at coming together. Culturally, we're very good at mixing, like in terms of music, in terms of food ways, in terms of art. It's always a mix. It's always, I see you, I'm immediately affected by what I saw, and now it's going to be a part of what I do. The separation is usually done from above, and it's usually done for social, political, it's usually done for economic reasons, it's usually done for power, you know, holding and retaining power. So this is why, you know, music is such an important force for reminding us of how the underlying, as you said in the beginning, those underlying commonalities that we express differently, but when you actually put them together in an authentic sort of, you know, deeply felt way, they actually do work well together and speak to each other.
So does this concept of othering, I'll ask the question, I already know the answer, but does it extend to music, you know, where people think this is my kind of music and that over there belongs to other people?
Absolutely, and it becomes a very dangerous weapon. You know, I know this from my research into what happened with American music where, you know, before the 20s, before the, you know, even before the Great Migration, where there was this commonality of expression in Southern music where if you had a string band, no matter if they were white or black, they played a common repertoire of tunes. And then you have the movement of African Americans from the South to the North for various understandable reasons. But then you also have this, you know, imposition from outside in the creation of the music category. And it seems like a harmless thing. Oh, now we can make money, we can put the records in bins. But it also was kind of hand in hand with a sort of xenophobic and racist agenda and this creation of a fantasy of what white culture was, you know, and this separation that their music is here and our pure sort of white character is represented with these, you know, this music, which actually itself is a creolization and a hybrid of black and white style. So I see what that does, how that adds into the cultural conversation and the danger and the damage that that does.
Right. Not only to the music, but to listeners who feel like, you know, something that could reasonably be considered theirs is presented to them as something that is not theirs and, you know, doesn't belong to them and they have no business liking or playing.
No, I mean, the music is actually the least of my worries. It's really how it creates this, you know, idea, number one, of a monolithic culture, and number two, of it's just a huge tool in dividing us, you know, and the more that we're divided, the less we realize that the people running the show still maintain their power and their wealth and all of that stuff, you know, and we're still squabbling over down here and it's all to their benefit that we think, oh, my music, your music, you know, my culture, your culture, and never the twain shall meet, when in fact America's great strength is the combination of cultures that have come together to create what has kind of inspired the world, you know, musically speaking.
Right. And the idea of the melting pot, you know, that all these cultures came together here. And now, whether people like it or not, we're seeing that pot melting in lots of other parts of the world as well.
It's kind of more like a gumbo where the flavor is this complex mixture of things. And when you just kind of take a sip of the soup, you're like, I don't really know what each of those things are. But then when you take a big spoonful, here's a bit of okra,
here's
a bit of, you know, sausage, here's a bit of this, here's a bit of that. It's like, the deeper you dig, the more of the individual elements you find, but then they all contribute to this flavor, which is undeniably a thing in and of itself.
Right. And, you know, some of us prefer the andouille sausage to the okra, but that's okay.
You know, that's all exactly it. Yeah. But, you know, when you put them together.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this album is kind of a gumbo. I mean, we're hearing Rhiannon some songs that you've written, but there's a traditional Italian dance. There's some traditional music from the British Isles. There's this strong Near Eastern sound that comes and goes throughout the record. And even some arias from a couple of American composers, Carlisle Floyd, Giancarlo Menotti. Mm-hmm. So How did that decision, how did those decisions get made?
Well, it was, you know, even the arias, it's all this attempt to not recognize the barriers that are kind of imposed on music. Like we've talked about some of the cultural and sort of racist barriers that have put up, but there's also, you know, this idea of elitism, you know, where opera is up here, vernacular is down here, and never the twain shall meet. And it's, you know, it's really more of a recent phenomenon because opera music has always been inspired by folk music and vice versa. You know, those worlds, the further back you go, the more connected they are. And I think that's also a damaging idea of only some people get what opera is, and they have disdain for each other and all this kind of stuff. And I just don't have any time for that because, you know, it's music and it's telling a story and it's representing something that, if it speaks to you, it should be able to speak to you no matter what the language is, you know?
Yeah. Francesco, when Rhiannon talks about going back in time, you know, to a point where, for example, folk music and opera were very close together, you have early music, and I mean, you go way back, right?
Yes.
Musically?
Yeah, I've done a lot of research and studying early music. I mean, it's a very broad term, but the stuff that I worked on the most would be late Renaissance, early Baroque music.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, you know, because I'm trained as a jazz musician as well, you know, those words are very, very similar. You know, there wasn't classical music or whatever, folk music, you know. So a lot of those pieces are very similar. They were folk songs that then got kind of elevated to classical, you could say, even though they didn't call it back then. There was a lot of improvisation. They used, like, grounds as basis for improvisation.
So,
you know?
Claudio Monteverdi, for example, would use these kind of what we would call a walking bass line today.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
There were like standards that everybody knew and everybody could improvise. And, you know, the fancy composers wrote nice variations, you know, for posterity. It's like, this is my version of Autumn Leaves, you know. this is the idea, you know. And so in that sense, they were extremely close, you know, also because music was very much more rhythm-based and very much more still connected to dance, you know, whatever classical music we can think of now. You know, later the divide became bigger, you know. So the approach is very similar. It's, you know, inevitably the musical languages are quite different when you talk about grammar and, you know, syntax. But the mentality is very similar, you know, certainly in the 17th century.
Well, and as you say, rhythm, you know, sort of lost its primacy in Western classical music.
Yeah.
It never lost it in Near Eastern classical music and in Indian classical music. And in fact, the next piece that you're going to play, Francesco, you're going to be picking up the daf, right?
I'm playing a frame drum called daf, which is from Iran. It's a large frame drum that has got little rings inside. And it's used in folk music, but it's used by Sufis as well in Iran for trance. You know, this is another element we talked quite a bit, you know, in this record, this idea of trance dancing and also healing trance, and, you know, there's many different cultures that have these aspects that has been a bit fading away over the last, you know, while.
And Rhiannon, in this song called I'm On My Way, you are playing a fretless banjo. What's the provenance of this instrument?
Well, this is a replica of sort of amalgam of some banjos by an early American maker from the 1850s. So a maker named Levi Brown, and Jim Hartle is the one who made this instrument. He makes copies of historical banjos in upstate New York. People are always surprised by this banjo, and this is, you know, how hidden the history of the banjo is, you know, because all banjos sounded like this for a good chunk of time. This is the first sort of commercial style banjo that white people would have played, you know, the minstrel banjo. Before this, it would have been plantation instruments, gourds, you know, homemade instruments. But the sound of a gourd and the sound of a minstrel banjo are very similar, you know. They're clearly were aiming for that sound when they made these instruments, you know. So to me, it's a really strong connection to the provenance of the banjo, which is an African-derived and then African-American created and then modified by European-Americans. You know, it's this kind of the American story, right?
Right.
Which is why it's, for me, has continued to be my primary tool to tell some of these stories.
All right. Well, there are many of them, perhaps 10,000 of them, being told during the course of this new record by Rhiannon Giddens with Francesco Torrisi. The album is called There Is No Other. This song is on it. It's called I'm On My Way.
Watching from my window, the curtain coming down, a blue as black as warning, a silence like a sound. bird so high above the fray? What should it mean to me? This crooked song gone crazy in the swaying arms of trees that wave to me like the hungry, waiting for the tide. My tipping boat still hoping I might reach the other side. But I'm on my way. Lord, if you love me, keep me, I pray. The little bird is stretching out to the shimmering, shaking blue. I don't know where I'm going, but I know what to do.
I'm On My Way is the name of the song. Live performance. Rhiannon Giddens wrote the song, played the minstrel banjo, Francesco Turisi playing the daf, the large Iranian frame drum, Jason Cipher playing the double bass. Rhiannon, how did you and Francesco come to work together on this?
It's so funny the way that the universe sort of works. You know, we both have connections to Ireland. Our kids are half Irish, so we live there, you know, when we're not on the road. And so, you know, he had heard about the chocolate drops and, you know, managed to get in touch with me because he had this idea about our sounds working together, you know, and we had a jam like 4 years ago, couldn't make anything work, you know, after that scheduling was crazy. And then we managed to reconnect in late 2017, and then everything aligned up to work on the music. And then I invited him into this ballet project that I was doing with Nashville Ballet. And
oh, is that the Lucy Negro
Redux?
Yeah,
yeah. So he became a co-composer on that, and we ended up performing it together. And so everything's just kind of, when it's time, it's time.
Yeah.
You know, so it all has worked out really, really well.
And you know, Francesco, you talked about being trained as a jazz musician, but studying early classical music, and here you are playing these Near Eastern drums. And so, I mean, you're both multilingual in terms of music. So there seem to be like multiple possible means of connection.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think we're very similar in that. And we still marvel at the fact that I think we have endless possibilities of, you know, we recently started working on an idea of a recital, just voice and piano, which is kind of our first instruments, you know. But there is so many possibilities because we both have this approach of being very curious about different types of music and having kind of gone into deeply into all these different types of tradition without saying that we are tradition bearers, you know, because
right,
I think
right.
It's very important to say that, you know, I mean, I'm not here playing the daf pretending that I'm Iranian. I'm playing the daf because there is people who spend their entire life on one of these instruments,
right.
You know. So I think, you know, with all I have all the respects we both have, and we really look deeply into the tradition, but then we take away one thing that can work for ourselves, you know. And I think we've been doing this with every one of the instruments and the cultures that we try to study.
And we're also connected to there's kind of a reason why the cultures that we are digging into speak to us, you know, like I'm from North Carolina, I'm generation removed from the sort of rural life that produced Joe Thompson, for example, and that kind of string band music, and that's part of my DNA. I mean, it's like, it's not to say that you have to have that, but it's an additional sort of connection. And, you know, and Francesco's family's from Sicily, and so the exploration of the Mediterranean and those sounds and what goes into making the music that his family would have been surrounded by, I mean, an additional pull, you know.
Well, and for an album that is kind of a rejoinder to the idea of otherness that mm-hmm. we see expressed in Xenophobia yeah. and the Rise of Nationalism, mm-hmm. the reminder that places like the Mediterranean or the Caribbean, that mm-hmm. these are like huge road, the Silk Road,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
that the yeah. flow of people and music and food mm-hmm. and ideas.
It's been going on for thousands of years.
I mean, and you can't yeah. you can't build a wall to stop that.
No. We just like we always go over. Like music and food and all that stuff always goes over and around yeah. and, you know, under.
It's like I talk about Sicily because that's where my parents are from, you know. It's like Sicily was dominated by Greeks, Romans, Arabs for right. nearly 400 years, you know. And then Normans, so you got also like North European stuff, French, Spanish, everyone was there.
Right.
And everything is there, you can see it in different layers, you know. So obviously it's a very good example, and I think it's a very good example of how great things are made by a mix of a lot of different things. There's no doubt about that, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's obvious examples of that, but actually every culture, every country, countries are artificial, you know, borders
right.
put around sort of vague cultural groups, right? But every cultural group is a mix. And just some are more obvious than others. But like everything that you think is a pure thing, you go back 50 years sometimes.
Right.
And, oh, that actually came from somewhere else.
Well, we just saw the abdication of the Japanese emperor and the ascension of a new emperor to the chrysanthemum throne. And, you know, it's got to be male to male because that's the tradition. But in fact, if you go back 1,000 years, there were women
exactly.
on that throne.
Yeah. It's tradition because somebody said.
Right. Because somebody you know? Said like 200 years ago, this yeah. is our tradition.
Exactly. That is always the case. And people just, we forget that at our peril.
Yeah. Interesting that the title track of There Is No Other has no lyrics. Mm-hmm. At some point, did you just feel like the music said more than you could with words?
Yeah, I mean, this record came about because of the sounds that we found together, you know, and that track itself came about from us playing together. Like, I didn't write it and then say, hey, would you play drums on this? It came from us just messing around and mm-hmm. and kind of marveling at how close the banjo and the frame drum are, you yeah. know, and learning the historical reasons for this, because there are reasons, you know. I mean, a lot of when you're putting a record together, every project has its own animus, you know, it has its own sort of vortex that starts to speak, you know, and it just kind of felt, it started feeling like that that needs to be, you know, what it's called, because it all started with the sounds.
Yeah. You know? So do you have pockets of songwriting that are exclusive to the people that, you know, like these songs are exclusive to this group with Francesco, and the songs with Dirk Powell are... Or can you mix them up?
Oh, they can mix them up because, like, they then have new life. Like, Purchaser's Option, for example, which is a tune that was on Freedom Highway. You know, Francesco's put on piano, mm-hmm. and we put it in 7. He put it in 7, and it, like, automatically has a completely new life. We actually put it in the ballet. And for me, it was an amazing example of how a song can really have another life just yeah. with another interpretation, you know?
Well, and some of your interpretations of folks, I love what you guys did with Little Margaret, with just the voice and the frame drum. Mm-hmm. It just reeks of age, you know, mm-hmm. of roots, of, yeah. you know, the idea that these stories get told around the world in different languages, and they're all fundamentally similar stories.
That's it, you know? And that, like, and the frame drum is, you know, meant to be done with the voice. Like, so... Yeah. Just because it's, you know, from however many miles away, like this song, everything actually originally comes from one source
yeah.
is the thing, you know, so they speak.
Now, Francesco, you're going to move to the piano for this
yes.
this next one, right? So right. 3 songs, 3 different instruments. Mm-hmm. That's a handy thing to have, Rhiannon, in a collaborator.
Well, it's a rare thing, and I know he feels this way too. I feel like I've collaborated with a lot of people and will continue to collaborate with a lot of people. But in some ways, my collaboration with Francesco has been the first that really allows me as a vocalist to be everything that I am in one, you know, sort of one environment. And I feel very lucky about that, you know.
So you mentioned before that you have this idea that the two of you might do sort of recital type mm-hmm. programming, voice mm-hmm. and piano. Mm-hmm. I guess this is getting fairly close to that idea.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's under development, but mm-hmm. yeah, it's...
You've taken it under advisement.
Yes, yes.
All right, the song is called He Will See You Through. Mm-hmm. It's a Rhiannon Giddens original, and here's a live performance.
When your path is full of worry, He will see you through. When you feel alone on your journey, He will see you through.
He Will See You Through is the name of the song. Francesco Tarisi at our piano, Jason Seifer playing the bass. Rhiannon Giddens wrote the song and sung it. That is, it's a beautiful way to leave us in the new record. It's the final track on There Is No Other. And Rhiannon, we're going to wrap up this session with just a little bit of a song called Briggs Foho.
Yeah.
Which to me seems like it sort of encapsulates a lot of the things you've been talking about.
It absolutely does. Yeah, it's a minstrel tune from 1855 and then a Brazilian tune.
Yeah, it's a Brazilian melody by Hermeto Pascoal. It's mm-hmm. a great Just when Rhiannon played this Briggs tune for me, it reminded me very much of forró, which is a music from the northeast of Brazil, which is very accordion-driven.
Right, right.
So similar rhythms, you know.
Spelled F-O-R-R-O, but exactly. Pronounced forró.
Forró. And so, you know, we just tried to put those things together and it seemed to work seamlessly.
Yeah, it was, like, pretty effortless.
So it's like the musical equivalent of fusion cuisine. You know, whoever it was that first thought that Thai food and Italian food might go together turned out to be absolutely right, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more like finding those things in the cuisine that
work
speak,
together.
You know what I mean? Because it's really important to say, it's like we're not just smashing things together for the sake of doing it. It's like the things that are already inherently, you know, speaking to each other, when we layer them together, then those peaks just really come out, you know?
Yeah. There is a big part of it, which is imagination, I always say. You know, like every great chef, what do they do? They know flavors and they can imagine things that most people can't imagine. And then they put it together and they go, there you go. It tastes amazing,
right.
You know?
Right.
And I think it's a little bit similar process what we're trying to do. We both have a lot of experience in so many different, you know, genres, instruments, and we just have this imagination in our ears and then we put things together and they work.
And then, and the amazing thing is that we've found subsequently a lot of times there's historical reasons why, and it goes, which is cool. So it's really being led, the art is leading and sort of being backed up historically, which I think is better than the other way around. Like, you know, here's this and this and this, it's like, because that's the way it really works. It always works from leading from the heart first, you know, so.
And how many times have we seen artists intuit things that history or technology or science only tell us is actually true decades or centuries later?
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, the album's called There Is No Other. It is a terrific record. Here's a little bit from it. Rhiannon Giddens, Francesco Tarisi, thank you both so much for coming in and playing for us today.
Thank you.
That's all for this Soundcheck podcast. Check us out at newsounds.org for other performances, in-studio videos, gig alerts, weekly music roundups, and more. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our associate producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us.